one.
Parasocial activity. What you know about that? Knowledge and camaraderie. Tell me what you know about that. Two pals teach each other about stuff they know, so that we feel a bit less alone.
Okay, so do you want to know? Do you want to know what the topic is?
I'm so excited. Please tell me.
Okay, it's Pippin. I don't know why.
Oh my god! Yay!
I'm so happy that you're happy and not like why.
Oh my god, no, that feels like such an appropriate topic, and also I've been listening to Pippin a lot lately.
Okay, so you're quite familiar with the music and the plot.
I am.
But
my
when was, like...
was yeah. I've seen it because my sister was the leading player in it.
When did that occur?
Oh, I don't know. Before I graduated high school, so sometime before 2014.
Maybe. Have you seen it since?
No. She saw it. So she was really happy when she found out the theater group she was with was doing it because she had seen the revival premiere at ART in Cambridge.
Oh, that's cool.
Like before it went to Broadway. And she was like, this is the best thing ever. And then she got to be this iconic character.
Who did she play?
She was the leading player.
Okay. Because you told me that your sister was in Pippin and that she felt that she wasn't creepy enough to play the lead character.
Yes, I stand by that.
I thought the lead character was Pippin. So the whole time I'm watching this musical, I'm waiting for Pippin to become creepy. And I was like, I don't see the creepiness. And then at the end, I realized the leading player
is literal
other character whose name is just the leading player.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah. No, but she sang it really well. It was still good to see. You have to be a very sinister person, I feel like, to pull off the leading player.
I don't think you do. I think the joy that I experienced watching this was that I did not realize that the leading player was going to be bad.
Oh.
Have bad intentions. So it was very thrilling at the end when that happened.
I do understand that. Yeah, she does. She tries to get him to jump into a fire.
Yeah, okay. So I kind of just want to talk about how I experienced the plot and then my hot takes about it.
Can I read the text you sent me? While you were watching it?
Yeah.
So you said, okay, I'll say one thing for this play. I have not yet seen a single plot point coming. First, he becomes a soldier. Then his grandma tells him to have orgies. Then he kills his dad. And there's still another hour. And that was, you did not tell me anything beyond that.
Well, then I continued watching.
Right.
And after intermission, everything changed. And it just became a completely different play.
Well, then he sings, yeah, then you later. Also update, Pippin is now serenading a sick duck.
Yeah, which if you were just listening to the recording, you would never understand. So I'm really glad I watched the actual play of the amazing high school that did it and posted it on YouTube. Which is honestly my favorite way to experience musicals is high schoolers performing them.
I really admire your commitment to like watching high school productions of musicals online.
Well, I've only done it twice, but
what was the other one?
Legally Blonde.
Oh, you know, you can like MTV did like a professional recording of the
Broadway. I also watched that later.
Cool.
It's really weird because I never realized how much I liked musicals until a few months ago when I heard a song from Legally Blonde on the radio.
Which one?
It was the opening song. Oh my god, you guys.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Because when I first heard there was going to be a musical about Legally Blonde, I couldn't imagine that it would be good. But then I heard that song and I was intrigued. So I listened to the rest of it and then I went home and I watched it. And it's so much better than the movie. And In my opinion. Do you disagree?
No, I think I agree with you. I think so. Lawrence O'Keefe was co-composer on both Legally Blonde and Heathers. And even though, first of all, he had different collaborators for each of those. And I also don't remember how much input he had on like the story. I just know that he was a composer. I think they both, Heathers in particular, I think they both do a better job of like developing the characters. I mean, they have much longer running time, so they have time for that. But yeah, I think I agree that I definitely enjoy the experience of watching Legally Blonde the musical. Mm-hmm. Another show Temma was in.
Oh, really? Who did she play?
She was Paulette.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, it's my favorite role of hers. Well, she was also Jo in Little Women, which was really good. Jo made me cry more, but Paulette made me laugh harder.
I was watching the Percy Jackson musical today, and I cried during it.
I forgot that that existed. How was it?
It wasn't very good. I mean, I was just watching a bootleg, but there was one song that made me cry, and I think it only made me cry because I know the book so well, and I was attached to the characters already. But that's so weird that so Temma played the leading player and Paulette in those two musicals that I watched on YouTube. The same high school performed both of them, and the girl who played Paulette also played the leading player.
What?
Must be some typecasting going on.
Must be my sister Temma going on.
She is black.
Nope, different from.
Otherwise, I would have been like, "Wait a minute, is this your sister's school?"
Nah, neither of them was out of school either. They were at a summer program.
Oh,
But anyway, I feel like I had another Legally Blonde thought, but now I've forgotten it.
It's okay.
And we should let's like encourage tangents, but in like
not
a benevolent dictator way.
Yeah.
I'm benevolently encouraging us to move on.
Okay. So yeah, I was loving this musical because it was so strange. The opening number, I knew nothing about it. There's just a bunch of people dancing on stage. You told me it was going to be circusy. There was no circus elements for the entire play, but there was like that energy. And then this main character comes, Pippin, and it's really confusing because you're 20 minutes into the show and you still don't know what it's about.
He doesn't come until 20 minutes in.
It felt like a long time. There was this long drawn out dance number, and then they announce Pippin, and he sings a song about how he wants to find meaning in life, which is a really weird way to start a musical, because then I don't know, because you need a more concrete goal than that, and there's no predicting what's going to happen next.
Pippin is just a millennial. I feel like
I could see that, but this play was written in the 70s, so millennials weren't born yet.
History is cyclical.
That's true. But yeah, so then he goes to war. There's all this plot about his family drama. His mom wants him to drop out and not be the king. And then the whole first act is just filler, but you don't realize it's filler. But you could take all of that stuff out and the end could be the same and have the same exact impact.
Yes, but all the songs in the second act are kind of bad.
Oh, I totally disagree.
Many of them. As soon as he gets to Catherine's, I don't like any of the songs.
Oh, interesting. Because I feel like the first act, the songs are fun, but they also are not really relevant to the character development of, you know, the only character who's real. So
what about the one where his grandmother tells him to enjoy life? And
that one is great.
Sleep around.
That one was really fun. but it was so weird because at that point you really are 45 minutes in and he still doesn't know what he wants. He's just wandering around, which I guess is the point. But I was enjoying the play, but I was thinking, how could this possibly be popular And how could people enjoy this? And then he kills his dad just kind of on a whim. And that's the end of the first act, which is interesting because in the original Broadway, I looked this all up later, the show is only one act. So there are no act breaks. Yeah. So, which kind of makes sense because I feel like it's such a buildup that having a break after he kills his dad really makes it feel like two shows.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a lot to sit through. So it makes sense that there's an act break. But then, the whole second act, he decides, you know what? I don't want to kill my dad. I'm going to undo that. And this is the point in the play where I realized that the fourth wall breaking was literal. I didn't really pick up on the fact that he was a character in a play that we were watching within a play. And I still didn't really pick up on that.
I think I had forgotten that. I mean, I know that like the whole thing is like they're performing, but I think I had forgotten that that was like the framing device.
Yeah. Well, I felt dumb later because the way they introduce him is saying he's new in the part. This is his first night.
Oh, yeah.
And then he has a little moment where he's like messing up his lines and then he asks for more light and then he sings his little song.
More light, perhaps.
That's not how the actor in the high school production delivered that line.
Oh, no, that's in the finale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is like, I don't know, they come out and they're like, welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen.
But all musicals do that, so that's you're awesome. Not really being aware that they're actually in a show within a show.
Yeah.
But in a way, they're also not, because the stakes are real. So,
right. Someone will get thrown into a fire.
Yeah. So then he meets Catherine, and she's an also actress. Introduced as an actress, and she gets berated for being late and getting too old for the part. Which, again, I was like, this is a weird fourth wall break, not realizing that was the point. And then they fall in love. And I honestly thought it was cute. I feel like I listened to a podcast about people talking about Pippin. And they were really hating on Catherine and saying, she's so boring. Like, I wish they'd made this part more interesting with more sexy dancing. But I liked that it was sincere and cheesy.
Yeah. That's funny that you say that because Temma and I... we're just having this conversation.
Really?
Yeah, because I was talking with her and I was like, I like Pippin, but I think the second act is full of boring songs. And she was like, yeah, Catherine gets a lot of hate. It really, excuse me. It really was this. She was like, Catherine gets a lot of hate, but she'd had to, I think, perform. What did she have to perform? Probably Love Song. I think she and her friend had performed Love Song for a class together. And she, I don't remember what she said, but she basically said, like, playing Catherine gave me a better understanding and a very different understanding of, I think, that idea that she is so often treated as an ingenue, but she's not an ingenue. I don't remember this idea well enough.
What's
to
an ingenue? It. Can you define it?
An ingenue is like a doe-eyed, young doe-eyed. I'm trying to think of another musical. You know Chicago?
No.
Okay.
I need to watch that.
It's really good. Yeah. I love the movie Chicago. Who's another? There's so many of them. I mean, Disney princesses are kind of.
Okay, I didn't feel like she was a Disney princess at all. I feel like that's the whole point of her song, Ordinary Woman.
Well, I agree, but now I have to Google the definition of ingenue. An innocent or unsophisticated young woman, especially in a play or film.
Okay, yeah, she's not that at all.
She is unsophisticated. She sings a whole song about it.
Well, but she's not naive.
She's not naive. That is true.
She's a widow.
Well, no, I think that's what Temma was saying, was like she's so often played as just, kind of bland. And
you know what's super interesting about that song that I find interesting?
What?
The line, I'm an ordinary woman, something or other. She says, I come around every decade or so, or every lifetime or so.
Uh-huh.
In the all the revivals and probably the versions you've seen, the line is, you'll meet me every lifetime or so. Mm-hmm. But in the original, it's once or twice every decade, which I feel like is such a strange, specific change.
That is that a strange, specific
I really actually prefer the decade because it kind of emphasizes the point that she actually is pretty ordinary and not one of a kind. But
yeah,
that's kind of the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I knew that there were a lot of changes when they did the revival, which mm-hmm. I'm sure some of them we've talked about before.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about the big one when we're done recapping the plot. But yeah, so then he leaves her. I was heartbroken. and then the leading player seduces him into jumping into the sun with a really great song where you're kind of like...
Is it the sun? Is it the literal sun?
It's a metaphor. He's jumping into fire. He's going to immolate himself on stage for our entertainment.
Right.
And then...
Feels very Marina Abramovic of him.
I don't know who that is.
Never mind.
Who is it?
she's the artist is present lady. She sits in a long... She sat in a long red dress at MoMA and stared at people.
Was she the one who allowed anyone to just come up to her and mess with her?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That stressed me out. Okay.
Yeah. I saw her. I was at the
really?
Met in whenever I was in eighth grade. What was that? I don't know. Whenever that was when she was.
2006, probably.
96. What? No. I was 10 in 2006. I'm not that much younger than you.
Oh. Well, because I remember it because in eighth grade was 2008 for me, and you're 2 years younger than me. So it probably was 2006.
No, I was 10 in 2006.
Am I being really dumb? Oh, maybe it was 2010 because you're younger.
Yes.
I was making you 2 years older because, you know.
Yeah, you were. I understand. Yeah. I like that we were both poor enough at math that it took us a minute. Yeah, it was 2010. Mm-hmm. We were at the Met and she was, or not the Met, the MoMA, and she was doing that. But yeah, so very.
Did people bother her? Did you go up to her?
Nah, we were just sort of. I was only there for the Tim Burton exhibit. I made my family go twice because the first time we ran out of time.
Aw, that's so cute.
and it was just like, you know, we went back and it was like, oh, there's that woman sitting at that table.
That's,
but anyway,
I can see why that would be memorable. But yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nothing like that, I don't think. He's just jumping into fire because it would be a big splashy ending and they promised a big finale at the beginning and mm-hmm. didn't really know what that meant. But then Catherine comes back and he's enticed to stay living. And then
yep.
I thought this part was so cool. They take away the music and the lights to punish him basically for choosing an ordinary life. And it's really uncomfortable. They rip off their clothes. They take away their costumes. And when I was watching it, you know, the leading player shoos away the orchestra, but this one piano player keeps playing. And mm-hmm. I almost felt like, oh, they're going to keep that playing because you can't have a musical without a little bit of background music. But then they got rid of the piano player and it's just so uncomfortable. I can't imagine sitting and seeing this live and just being like, where's the music? And then, so yeah, in the version I watched, they had Catherine's son, Theo, come back on stage and start singing Pippin's song.
Long where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can fly. I've got to be where my spirit can run free. Gotta find my corner of the sky.
And then all the creepy people coming back and singing the immolation song. And
right.
then that's how it ends. And I thought that was a great ending.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they're singing. I agree. I really like mm-hmm. the Theo ending. I don't think they're singing. I don't think in that moment. They're like, immolate yourself.
No, they're singing kind of the build up to the...
They're singing Magic to Do.
Yeah, well, that is the foreshadowing of, you know, he's going down the same path that Pippin just went down, and that it's a possibility that he will make that choice. So it's very creepy and sinister.
Right. That he has no patience for the farm.
Yeah,
life.
But I felt so relieved when that ending happened, because I was like, they're not going to end this play with no music. I can't applaud. I can't applaud to that. And then...
Dude, have you seen Cabaret?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that show also ends with no music.
Well, I'll have to watch that. it's okay. But then, so the music comes back and I was like, oh, like what a relief. Even though I should have been feeling dread and creepiness, and I did a little bit, but mostly I was just feeling like, oh, I'm so glad this show ends with a bang, so I can feel that like sense of like, ooh, I just watched a show.
Right.
But then I went to the comments section and I learned
on this high school YouTube video.
And I love the comment section, and everyone was like, oh, you did such a great job.
I did too.
But then a ton of people were saying, oh, I can't believe you did the Theo ending. It ruins the vision of Bob Fosse, who like slaved over this beautiful production, and it takes away the meaning. And I was like, what? Like, what is this other ending? Have you ever seen the alternate ending?
No, I've only seen the Theo ending, because that's...
Did you know that there was an alternate ending?
Not until you told me.
Okay, yeah. So...
Like before, not in this
Yeah. I think I mentioned it to you like over text or something, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I of course had to watch a second version. And so in the original Broadway show, the first time it was ever performed... It ended in the same way, with Pippin choosing Catherine, and the leading player is like, all right, I'm taking away all your magic. And he actually rips all his clothes off, and Catherine and Theo. And in this version, Theo is played by an actual child.
Right.
He looks about 5. And so they're all standing naked on stage.
Oh, gosh. This is the original Theo is 5?
This is the original. Yeah, the original was extremely...
Wait, did you find the original?
I found something quite similar.
Okay.
I don't think I found the very original.
You can find like the Ben Vereen version.
I did actually, yeah. Ben Vereen was in it, yeah.
Sick, okay.
I don't know if it was the original Pippin, but it might have been. But yeah, Ben Vereen was in it. All the commenters were like swooning over him, which was fun. And then the musical ends with them standing on stage, and I think... Catherine asks Pippin, how do you feel? And he just says, trapped, but happy. And then that's the end of the show.
And okay, the ending is way better.
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, which is really weird, because normally the first time I watch something is whatever I prefer.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we disagree on this, but I think the original Willy Wonka is better than the Johnny Depp version, because that's the one I watched when I was a kid, and I just think it's better.
Okay.
But I think if I'd watched the other one first, I probably would prefer that.
Right.
But yeah, I think this ending, like the sad, creepy ending, was so uncomfortable. I think it brings the message better.
Okay.
I disagree with the commenters who say that the Theo ending ruins everything, because I truly think that they have the same meaning either way, but the Theo ending kind of gives you an out where you don't have to think too hard about it.
Ooh,
you don't have to feel that discomfort and sit in a dark theater in silence and contemplate existence.
You don't have to sit with like, this is the trade, like most people live in a world where they are happy, even though they're not sort of surrounded by glamour. And
yeah,
I want to say like a Baz Luhrmann Pippin. I feel like, I mean, that kind of just feels like Great Gatsby is like the the same kind of commentary, or not the same, but overlapping commentary. But yeah, no, I definitely understand your point. When you see the Theo version, it's just kind of like, yeah, cool. It's more singing. I love the singing.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the version where it just ends, you have to think about how scary it is to make the decision to stay on a life path that you don't know will make you happy.
Yeah.
Which also, even crazier fun fact about the original ending is that so Steven Schwartz wrote the line as trapped but happy. And then the choreographer, Bob Fosse, was like, actually, that's too easy. I want it to be even more depressing. We're just going to have it end with him saying, trapped.
Okay.
Just so trapped. And that is how it ended. Wow. In the original, the very original ending, he just said, I feel trapped. And
does he say it cheerfully?
No, he says it with fear, I think.
Wow.
I actually didn't find a recording of it, but I just am extrapolating that he probably said it. Maybe he just said it, you know, trapped, just kind of matter of fact.
Yeah.
But that's the final, his line in the last song is where he says, if I'm never tied down, I'll never be free, or something like that. So it kind of ties in with that. But imagine seeing that musical and it just ends with him saying trapped and then the lights going down. How did it get popular? I don't understand people enjoying this.
I don't understand. I also have asked that question a lot because the plot is weird. It's just a series of weird vignettes.
Yeah.
I know, I'm pretty sure a lot of the arrangements that I love from the revival, which is the only soundtrack I know, were not included in the original. They were added. Although I might be...
Wait, sorry, what did you say? I just zoned out.
Sorry. I think there are elements of the arrangements in the revival that I believe were added for the revival.
Oh, really?
Well, it might just... I know for... Tema told me, like, in Corner of the Sky... Have you listened to the soundtrack at all?
I've listened to both versions of the soundtrack.
Whoa. I'm usually good about doing that. With Pippin, I've always just been like, no, I don't need anything else. I like this one. I know that, like, Corner of the Sky is a little bit blander in the original. Like, I think they kind of... They kind of rewrite one of the verses to be more like a bridge, I think. Like when he goes, so many men seem destined. Like, I think originally it was, so many men seem destined to settle for some things. Like, it was just like another verse.
Interesting.
And it is such a repetitive song that, you know, it's like very, yeah.
So I listened to another podcast about Pippin where they interviewed people who were, it was actually a Bob Fosse themed podcast episode.
Okay. And podcast was Bob Fosse themed?
It was a musical themed podcast and they did a two part episode.
What's it called? Shout it out.
Literally tons of them.
I don't know why I never listened to those.
The Forbidden Stage or something like that.
Okay.
But they did an episode where they interviewed a bunch of people who were close with him. And one of them was John Rubinstein, who played Pippin. And the way he told the story is that he couldn't really dance and he couldn't really sing. And they picked him to play Pippin anyway. Maybe he was just being self-deprecating, but there's that whole sequence in the song On the Right Track where he's not a good dancer. And the leading player is a good dancer. And that's kind of the whole gimmick is he's trying to emulate him.
Yeah.
And I think I thought that he was just pretending to be a bad dancer. But actually...
He just was.
They wrote that choreography with his lack of skill in mind.
That's cute. That's like Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady. Not being able to sing.
Oh.
And that's why he just like speaks all his songs. Or not all of them, but he does more speaking than is typical.
Well, that would sort of explain maybe why the original recording is a little less jazzy, is because he's kind of an average singer.
Yeah. And Matthew James Thomas has like a beautiful voice, like a flute.
Yeah. All the Pippins besides the original have angelic voices.
Yeah. I wanted to do a, I don't know what this would be. I wanted to do just like a little audio supercut of all of the musicals I like, just like bits of like the male leads,
just for your own falsetto pleasure.
I don't know, I was just like, I'd been listening to Pippin a lot, I've been listening to Hadestown a lot, and that dude sounds like Reeve Carney, sounds a lot like Matthew James Thomas, and like sings a lot in falsetto in that show. And then did you ever listen to The Great Comet, the show based?
Not yet. Okay. I really want to.
Well, the guy who plays Anatole has some fantastic falsetto moments. Oh my god.
I hate Anatole.
Oh, he's so fun to hate on. Oh. And I mean, he like performs his part like wonderfully in The Great Comet, but like, yeah, he's so excited.
Evil man in the book. So.
Oh yeah. No, he is in this too, but he's also just like a hilarious dandy. There's like a
yeah,
line
I can see
about
him being
like
fun to hate.
His perfumed head. It's, yeah, I'm really excited.
Sounds like a quote, honestly.
Sounds like a quote. Oh, yeah. I mean, most of, or many of the lyrics in that show are taken directly from the book.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I need to listen to it.
To the point where people sing narration a lot. Like, they'll be like, I blush happily. Like,
that's weird.
No, I like it.
Does it work? Okay.
I don't know. I feel like I'm such a Dave Malloy stan and such like a Great Comet defender that I don't.
Do people, does it need defending? I kind of thought everyone liked it.
I have a close friend who really did not like it.
Sounds personal. Are you still friends?
Oh yeah. I love her very much, but just I personally know not this friend. I know some other people who love theater who walked out of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And it lost many Tonys to, or it lost like the big Tonys to Dear Evan Hansen, which I'm sure I will talk
Hot
about
take.
On another episode. It makes me very angry.
Really?
Yeah.
I liked Dear Evan Hansen, but I did experience it live, so it's hard not to like it when you see it in person, I feel.
I think that's probably true.
Just swept up for the ride.
I really wanted to like Dear Evan Hansen. I think I'm probably just going to end up doing a Pasek and Paul episode at some point.
What's that?
They're the composers. Oh. They're a little preview of if I do a Pasek and Paul episode. They composed this very beautiful folk musical called Dogfight at one time, based on the movie Dogfight. And then they sold the heck out. They made Dear Evan Hansen. They did the lyrics for La La Land. They did The Greatest Showman. I talk about them in my La La Land PowerPoint a little bit.
Yeah, now it's ringing a bell. But would you consider Dear Evan Hansen selling out? Because I don't think they knew that was going to be so successful.
They probably didn't, but
they thought it was just a little passion project.
It feels like selling out. I don't know.
I don't believe in the concept of selling out, really.
Why is that?
I mean, I'm sure it happens, but I really dislike when people get angry at artists for becoming successful.
Very fair.
Yeah.
I'm not resentful that they became successful. I'm just resentful that they do a lot of projects that I don't think are very good. That a lot of people do think are very good.
So did you think their other work was good until they sold out?
I think that Dogfight is like a wonderful musical, but I'm not the biggest fan of La La Land.
Is anyone?
I've met some real defenders of La La Land on my journey too.
I was so bored
and
angry
about it. I wasn't. I was desperate to enjoy it, which is why I went back and saw it a second time.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, and then eventually I think I just sort of accepted that it had betrayed me. by being not very good when it should have been the best movie ever. We didn't have to get into that, though.
I kind of, I do want you to do more because I loved your PowerPoint on that. But yeah.
Thank you so much. Let's return to Pippin.
Yeah. What was your favorite Pippin song?
Great question. Okay, so the song that, like, inevitably I start dancing in the middle of, like, I always am doing something and then I have to stop whatever I'm doing because I'm like, I want to be dancing, is Simple Joys.
And wouldn't you rather be a left-handed flea, a crab on a slab at the bottom of the sea, or a newt on the root of a banyan tree, than a man who never learns how to be free?
I found that song to be extremely forgettable.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that song is such a bop. Yeah, Simple Joys.
I feel like I should give it another chance.
I think you should. I really like it. It's funny. I'm not crazy about Just No Time at all musically. I just like it as like a character moment, and I like some of the lyrics. I really like On the Right Track. I like a lot.
That's my favorite, I think.
That's your favorite? If I had to pick one.
Maybe. I like their little harmonizing moments, and it's just like...
They're really satisfying.
Fun. Yeah, that's exactly the word I was looking for.
There's no trick to staying sensible despite each cul-de-sac, cause each step's indispensable when you're
Whose vocal performance do you like better as the leading player, Ben Vereen or Patina Miller?
I think I like Ben Vereen better. I feel like he had the casual confidence down. I liked her too. I think it's super interesting that pretty much every other version, his character is played by a woman. And in the original recording, I didn't realize it was sung by a man for a while because his voice kind of sounds feminine in some of the songs, or high-pitched. But maybe it's just because I saw videos of him performing, but I feel like he just did a really good job as that character.
Do you know, I always assumed that the casting of a woman as that character originated with Patina Miller. Do you know if that was happening before the revival?
I think that Ben Vereen was not the last man to play the part. You're right. So the first woman to play it was Patina Miller.
But then everyone was like, sick.
Yeah, we like this. Yeah.
I mean, I like it. I do really like that dynamic.
Yeah. I think it helps the character feel less sinister. You're less suspicious.
I don't know, man. I haven't like compared her to Ben Vereen because I have never seen or listened to his performance, but I think her character is very sinister.
Yeah, maybe I think just because I went into it I wasn't really trying to pay attention and figure out what was going on. I was just kind of along for the ride. So I thought she was an impartial narrator, like the narrators in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, which I'm pretty sure they didn't actually have any say in the plot. So I was just picturing her as that kind of character. I didn't look for motives because I didn't realize she was a character until the end. But looking back, there were definitely moments where I could have figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, and she definitely does get much more sinister in the second act. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, when she's yelling at Catherine.
Yeah, when she's like, stop singing your song. It's not in the
show. They don't always put that song in the show, which is kind of funny. she's like, don't sing this. You don't get, this isn't your line. And that's when I started to be like, wait a minute. Why is the narrator being so pushy?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Into the Woods in that way, where the narrator just becomes a more active participant in the story in the second act.
Yeah, well, the narrator is a major character in the second act, right?
And Into the Woods.
Yeah. Isn't it revealed to be like the dad?
No, that's the mysterious man.
Oh, who the heck is the narrator?
Often, The narrator, I think the narrator and the dad are often played by the same person.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's why I'm confused.
At least in productions I have seen, they are. No, but in the second act, the narrator is sacrificed to the giant.
Oh, I forgot.
They all notice him being like, they're all fighting about who to feed to the giant. And he's like, as our characters quarreled. And then they all like stop and start looking at him.
I don't remember that. Oh my gosh. Did that happen in the movie?
No, because the movie cut out the narrator.
Wow, what a terrible not have mistake.
One. Yeah.
I wonder if it was in the version I saw, because I saw it in my middle school's performance, which was incredible.
They might have... I like that you're shouting that out.
Yeah.
They might have cut it out of a children, like the children's performances often cut out the second act. They just stop at the first act, which really negates the entire purpose of Into the Woods, where the first act is just set up for the second act.
Yeah, my friend Laura played the baker's wife in Into the Woods, and she told me that her makeout scene with one of the princes was cut from our school's performance, which was good because the guy playing the prince, you know, she didn't really want to make out with him anyway.
Well, my sister didn't want to make out with her close friend at the time when they played the baker's wife and the prince.
Oh, really? Wait, Teva played the baker's wife?
Yeah, she did.
Oh my gosh, she's so prolific.
Yeah, this is just... I didn't mean for this to just be a review of
every musical your sister has played. Yeah, but I would love to hear her takes on the musicals that she's been in.
Yeah, no, we will have to have her on to tell us them. Wait, but going back, I want to return to the question of songs that are good in Pippin, because there are a bunch. So I've what's really grown on me recently has been With You, the orgy song. Just because, like, you know, first it's like this beautiful, romantic, and sort of like wistful song that he sings. And also it's kind of ironic because it feels like a romantic song, but it's like leading up to him just like banging everyone. But then it becomes such a good instrumental number. Like, I don't know how much of that arrangement is the revival versus the original, but like there's like this really, it goes through so many weird stages. Like, first there's like this shoo, shoo. You know what I'm talking about? And there's like doo 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 doo, which feels like still like not an orgy song.
I mean, it's an orgy with a weird vibe.
but then there's like that sick guitar wail that's like like it's so good.
I felt so uncomfortable watching high schoolers do this scene.
I don't think Temba's production had that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that would be... It's always interesting to see what high school productions do or don't include.
Yeah, and I think this play is so sexual and...
Pippin is?
Yes. Yes.
I've only seen a children's production.
Oh, Selena. yeah, well, even the opening number, they talk about presenting sex pastorally, and then all the girls raise a leg. And they do it a lot. I mean, the original choreography is nonstop sexual vibes.
Is it just, like, gyrating?
Well, it's not so overt. It's just, well, especially the orgy scene. No one's wearing clothes, really. And there's a lot of hands touching hands. And I really went down a rabbit hole because all those comments about Bob Fosse, I was like, all right, who is this guy? So I watched his movie, All That Jazz. Have you ever seen it?
No, I almost went to the Coolidge to see it.
I watched it the other day. And it's basically just an autobiography of his life. But he dies at the end. There's this one scene in the movie where they're presenting their rehearsal to the investors of their musical. And the scene is an orgy scene of a bunch of flight attendants getting naked on a plane and having sex. And I felt so uncomfortable watching it, even just alone in my room, I could not imagine watching that in a theater. And the plot line in the show is the investors going like, oh, we can't put this on the stage. But that's clearly like what he wanted for pretty much. Those were just the vibes he was going for. But yeah, you should really watch that scene. It's,
I should just watch that movie.
Yeah, the movie was really great.
There's also Fosse Verdon, the FX miniseries, which I've been meaning to watch.
Yeah, I need to watch that as well. I've really become interested in these topics. Thanks to your one-handed comment about how you were listening to the Pippin soundtrack. And I was like, what's that?
I know. And that's, yeah, no, I'm, if this becomes a little bit a musical podcast, I have no problem with that.
Whatever we're interested in talking about. And sometimes I have, you know, mini obsessions that last a few months. So
I fully understand that. Okay, so you know how I didn't want to call Temma because that would be very unexpected and abrupt, but I did text her.
What did she say?
And ask her for her thoughts.
On Pippin? Did she answer?
On Catherine.
Oh, Catherine.
So she was still typing just now, but she did send me a little block of text. So I'm going to invoke, summon Temma. Is Temma in the room?
I feel her presence.
Cool. So... basically, I used to think she was an annoying, incredibly plain, ingenue-like character, but when I revisited the scenes where the leading player intervenes, particularly during I Guess I'll Miss the Man, I realized that she's being forced to play that type of character in the leading player's telling of the story. Many people play her as a ditzy, almost, and again, plain. Is a ditzy, almost. That might be a typo. But I think there's room for depth. A hardworking, quirky, loving woman who's being forced to play a delicate part and not doing so very gracefully. She's not supposed to sing about falling for and missing Pippin, but it's suggested that the actor playing Catherine actually did fall for Pippin and is finally going to express an authentic emotion and defy the leading player's agenda. That's Temma's take.
I feel like that's pretty backed up by the text. Like the scene where Pippin is talking to Catherine and she is being very tender with him, and then the leading player comes in and says, no, you have to deliver your line in a more nagging way. And so she does, and then Pippin is like, ugh, this naggy woman.
What a weird show.
Such a weird show, especially I'll Miss the Man, makes him sound terrible.
Yeah. It does.
It's very strange because when you see them together, he seems like he treats her pretty well. He complains about doing chores, but in that song, she describes him as being pretty horrible. And I feel like that was kind of a gimmick and you're not meant to take it seriously. I feel like they just were trying to be clever with their lyrics, but they weren't actually being sincere. Because why would you miss someone who is worse than the most annoying man you've ever met, which is sort of how she describes him in that song.
Right.
It's confusing.
It is confusing.
But I'll overlook it because I thought it was sweet that they fell in love despite the odds.
Despite the odds of him being like a wandering murderer slash soldier slash
artist
serial orgy haver.
I feel like this play, the lead character has to be a white guy.
Yeah.
And also,
oh wait, the lead player, not Pippin. You're saying
Pippin has to be a white guy.
Yeah.
And That's another thing. My first impression of the show, they introduce Pippin as the son of a king, next in line for the throne, but they also sort of introduce him as this underdog character. And I was like, how can he be an underdog? He has everything really lined up for him.
Well, the real Pippin was
a hunchback.
I believe a hunchback.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he's not a hunchback in this. They specifically say that.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Man, I wish I had known we were going to do Pippin. I would have. It's been like 10 years since I've seen it.
Oh, but, yeah. Well, maybe I should have told you, but I wasn't sure I was going to do it because I almost felt like it was weird for me to tell you about a musical that you might know more about than I do.
Well, you did research, though. I think it works very well because I know sort of what I've, like, learned on my own time and, like, experienced, but you, like, did the learning.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it, so.
I'm so glad. Man, what a great, start.
I hope so. I feel like I'm not sure I explained the plot very well, but.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think, like, the point is, and I watch a lot of video essays on YouTube of movies I haven't seen, and I don't mind doing that because I know I'll never watch them, or if I do watch them, I don't mind being spoiled. But I feel like for Pippin, I am so glad I saw it with no knowledge of what it was about. But I think I can still be enjoyed knowing everything.
Wait, so how many full productions did you watch?
I didn't watch the full original. I just watched clips of it. And I also watched another high school, but it was real bad. So I had to click out because I felt too much embarrassment.
Right. So you've seen one full production and parts of two productions.
Yes. And I listened to the 1970s recording and the 2013 one.
Right. And which one? Did you say which soundtrack you liked better or just which leading player?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I like the revival soundtrack better.
Okay.
I think it's just cool. I think it's just a little bit more like bright and poppy.
Yeah. I feel like I often prefer, not always, but often prefer the revival soundtrack because they pop it up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the original, I feel like, really relied on you had to be there, you had to watch all the sexy dancing, and that's probably why it was popular. I truly can't imagine why else you would see it a second time, or like after I watched it, I went to re-listen to the soundtrack, and I was listening to it, and they got to the song War is a Science. And I was listening to it and I was like, this song could be cut. This song was not needed. Now that I know how it ends, the only point of that song is just to show Pippin going to war and being dissatisfied.
He just really wants to participate in
but
war.
But he doesn't. He just sort of does it just because his family's doing it. And
well, but he's really excited at the prospect of it once he's like in the army.
Yeah, he's hoping it will give him fulfillment in life, and then it doesn't. Yes. And that takes three songs for him to figure out. And then...
What are the three? War is a Science, Glory.
Glory, and then... Well, I guess just two, but then he goes to see his grandma, and she sings It's Time to Start Living.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, war is not the answer. I should invest in romance or sex.
My dick.
Yeah.
Romance.
Yeah. Well, that's a kid's version. It's romance.
Right. Which is obviously the only version I'm familiar with.
Yeah. And then he decides he's going to become a political activist. And
is he?
Yeah. At least.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, because the leading player comes and tells Pippin, hey, you know that your father is, you know, a tyrant and kind of mistreating the citizens. And he sees a protest of a bunch of peasants asking for food, and that's why he decides to kill his dad. And then his stepmom also convinces him to kill his dad again. Right. Another song that could be cut.
Yeah, I don't like that song.
Not even that I don't like it, it's just that plot point could have been a 2-second conversation and we would have gotten to the same ending.
Pippin, I usually do hold it a lot more against musicals when their songs don't further the plot. La La Land. But with Pippin, I feel like Pippin just like, I am okay with the fact that it breaks all the rules and is still, it gets away with it.
Well, it's
in my book.
It's breaking rules, but it's not breaking the rules of its own logic as a show because those songs I just said could be cut. Actually, it's not that they could be cut, it's just that they could be replaced with something else and the story would stay the same, But they do need to be, something needs to be there in order to convey the kind of show that the leading player was trying to put on was just some sort of epic about a prince doing all these things. And then in the second act, it genuinely becomes a different show because he's breaking out of that musical that they cast him in.
Yeah.
And kind of writing his own story or whatever. But yeah, so I don't mind it when I think of it that way. But
yeah,
it still is less satisfying to watch the first hour knowing that all of this is not just a musical. It's a musical within a musical. And the plot doesn't really matter. It's basically just a long montage of him trying different things.
Yeah, the whole first... Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe like the point is kind of, it's like the, when you tell a joke where the joke is that the lead up is so long, like
oh
the build
God.
Up is so long. Like maybe the point is just like, this is a big old slog.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes things that are longer feel more emotional when they're over.
They do. That's why I cry every single time Into the Woods ends.
Because you're like, okay, I can go to bed.
Well, no, it's because it's really emotional. But
yeah, that's, I cried when I finished reading The Count of Monte Cristo, mostly because it took me like a year.
Oh, that's nothing. It takes me so much longer than that to read much shorter books than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It took,
but mostly because I stopped.
It took me almost a decade to read Little Women because I kept getting really bored.
Yep. I never finished that. My whole book group when I was 10 agreed to read that, and we, I think like one person finished it. We all got like 2/3 of the way through.
You had a book club when you were 10?
Yeah, it was a mother-daughter book group.
That's so cute.
It was.
That's so sad that none of you guys finished the perfect mother-daughter book, Little Women.
I know. It was so long. I could finish it now.
It's also really sad and almost too sad. You don't even want to finish it.
You know, I got a healthy dose of sadness from watching my sister Temma perform it.
Oh, I've never seen the musical version.
The music isn't that good, but it's like, I don't know. We were kind of like scornful of it, and then it was the show Temma's school put on.
So you had to love it.
I mean, I did love watching her in it. I loved the experience of seeing that production. But yeah, the song when spoilers, Beth dies, that was devastating. I'm pretty sure I left that theater like still crying.
Yeah, I would probably cry.
It's pretty sad.
I cried when I saw Little Women last Christmas.
The movie?
Yeah, I cried a few times. And I was with my family, so it was embarrassing.
No, it's... Well, I don't know. Everyone's different with their family. I feel like that's a very appropriate movie.
None
to
of
cry
them
at.
Were crying. You know what I'm saying? Oh, like I was wiping my tears, and they were debating the ending and saying like, "Oh, what do you think?" I was like, "I'm still recovering emotionally. I want to rewatch that."
Yeah, it probably would be. I have no desire to ever see that movie a second time, but it'd probably be pretty good.
Did you hate it?
No, I just don't need to see it again.
But Timothy!
I do love him, but I, you know, why watch Little Women for a second time when I can watch Call Me By Your Name for like a sixth time, you know? You know what I'm saying?
So you can still enjoy Call Me By Your Name?
Oh my God, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You're not just thinking about cannibalism?
You know, Armie Hammer is such a creep in that movie. Mm. In the same way that I could still enjoy, like, Sorry to Bother You, because Armie Hammer is, like, a creepy sociopath, like, I think I'd be okay. Hmm. You know, and if I find that too upsetting, I can go watch Dune.
Can you?
I don't know. Is it available?
I'm pretty...
Is it out yet?
No, I can't wait. We should watch it together.
I don't know if I want to watch Dune.
I'll watch it and I'll tell you.
Yeah, just live text it to me.
Okay. I'll send you screenshots of if he has any good outfits.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just like any like glamour shots of him and Zendaya, I would like to see.
What were we talking about? Yeah.
Pippin.
Oh, well, you know what? I asked you your favorite songs, hoping you'd ask me mine, but I guess.
Oh, no. Well, no, you started to just tell me them, but I would love to know. What are your favorite songs, Pippin?
Like I said, On the Right Track, I liked a lot.
Uh-huh.
I liked Ordinary Kind of Woman. I don't know. Do you hate it?
I really don't like it. I'm sorry.
I'm your average, ordinary kind of woman, competent and neat, making life a treat.
I think when I saw it, I was like, finally, there's going to be plot. I'm pretty sure this character is going to stick around for more than one song. Uh-huh. And then she stuck around for the rest of the play. It was such a relief.
For all of the bad songs.
Yeah, I mean, Love Song was pretty boring, but...
That's the one I dislike the least. But
interesting.
I don't know. I like that image, sitting on the floor. I just like the first lyrics. Sitting on the floor and talking till dawn, mm-hmm. Candles and consequences is just a very satisfying lyric.
Yeah.
To me.
That is a nice little lyric.
So you like Love Song, or not Love Song, you like Ordinary Kind of Woman.
Yes. I liked No Time at All. I thought it was fun. I liked that that was the song they used for the curtain call in the version I watched. I don't know if they do that for all productions, but I thought that was such a fun song to end on.
That is a nice curtain call song.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, it's time to start living.
Corner of the Sky, which is fine. It reminds me too much of Look at the Sky from Urinetown, which is the only musical.
I'm actually not familiar with Urinetown.
It's the only musical I ever performed in, so I know it quite
what?
Well.
What? I didn't know you had a musical performance career.
Yeah, my senior year, I finally realized, oh, I love watching the musicals and all my friends are in them. Maybe I should just do it. And then I did, and it was really fun.
That's awesome.
That one also has a very dark ending, but there's this very idealistic character who sings about the sky in that one, and very different character from Pippin, but something about it just rubbed me the wrong way. Oh, and I love the opening song, Magic to Do. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. What about Morning Glow? How do you feel about that song?
I found it kind of boring.
You know, like when the chorus kicks in and it gets like exciting?
I don't remember.
Oh. Wait, and what's the... Oh, what about the final song?
I love the whole finale. I could watch over and over again.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It is really good.
I think if I did see this musical on Broadway in real life, I would definitely want to see it with the Theo ending.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I need that catharsis. I need the reprise. I can't go home on that note.
Just feeling hollow.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I always feel very uncomfortable at the end of movies. Like that moment when the credits roll and then you and your friends have to sort of look at each other again and talk. I find it very uncomfortable because you all have to suddenly talk about how you feel about the movie.
And yeah, I understand.
There's that moment of anticipation where you don't really know how they felt and whether you're going to vibe. I don't know. Whoever speaks first sets the tone.
That is very true.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I don't know, definitely not for all movies, but for many movies, I feel like I walk out, even if my opinion like flips, like I walk out with an opinion.
Yeah, I do too. But it's like whenever I have a book club meeting, I always have so many opinions and I'm so excited to share them. And then if I'm the first to speak, I have a great time. But if someone else is the first to speak and they have strong disagreements with me, I still am excited to, you know, share my opinion. But at the same time, it feels different. It feels...
Yeah.
I suddenly, the way I view that book is colored by knowing how they feel about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. I went through a phase where I tried not to read reviews after I saw movies.
Mm.
But I just like reading them so much.
Yeah. I kind of like having someone else's opinion influence mine. I love reading reviews.
Yeah. I just like dialogue. Like reviews are like a dialogue.
I want to talk about it with someone.
Exactly. You could say that you have almost like a parasocial relationship with the reviewer.
I have a parasocial relationship with YouTube commenters. And if I if I watch a whole YouTube video and I scroll down and there's no comments.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst feeling.
It's very disappointing.
Yeah. So that's how I feel like I would feel if I watched Pippin with the original ending. But like 10 times more intense.
Right. That does make sense. Well... Lucky for you, you did get to set the tone on our podcast.
That's true. Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for not being the first of us to do an episode on musicals, because there are 100% more of those to come.
I was the first. And not making you be the first.
Thank you for not making me be the first.
It's like, then what heck did I just do for an hour? Were you even listening?
That's the one. yeah, thank you for kicking off our podcast with a nice musical episode.
You're welcome.
Do you have any other thoughts on
I think that my main thought is just that I think I'm happy that this musical exists, but I don't know why. And I don't know why people like it, but I like it.
You know, that's art, baby.
Ooh.
Well, on that note, this has been my co-host, Tess.
And this has been my co-host, Selena.
And we will see
you next time.
Catch you next time. I'm gonna throw in I meant to throw in my disclaimer. Which is that this whole project is an experiment in which I teach myself to conquer my fear of recording equipment and editing as a skill that I don't yet have. So presumably, if you don't like how this sounded, not because you don't like our voices or our conversation, but because the audio sounds kind of wacky, it'll get better. Stay with us. It will improve, I promise.
But nothing else will.
No, the quality of show will stay exactly the same, unless you like my reporting on a topic of my choice better than Tessa's.
I think that you're going to have a very different tone.
I will, because I'm anxious and I'm going to bring in it's going to be a lot of examples.
I can't wait for you to vomit all your opinions onto me.
I thank you for that visual. anyway, see you next time.